Welcome to Shorties, a short true crime story.
Well, hey girl.
Hey girl. Hi. Happy Tuesday.
I'm so happy to be doing this.
I know. Day two. Here we are.
I know.
So what do you have for me, little lady?
Well, little lady, I have the story of Bridget Frisbee. Have you heard of it?
No.
All right. Well, you're going to be heard about it. Wait, you're going to know. You're going to be hearing about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Katy, Texas is located about 30 minute. Here we go.
Here we go. This is it.
And three, that was two, it. Go. Okay, good. It's always weird doing the first one back.
It's weird. It's just rusty. I feel like all week we're going to be messing up, but just get through it.
Yeah. Katy, Texas is located about 30 minutes west of Houston, Texas. Like most quiet small towns, the people that live there feel really safe. They think that their town is the last place that anything bad could ever happen. On April 4th, 2011, two teenage boys came across a body in the woods of Northwest Harris County, Texas. The young woman was wearing furry blue leg warmers, a matching furry blue skirt, and glitter. The police were notified and quickly arrived at the scene. Detectives were super taken aback by the odd clothing that she was wearing. They had never seen anything like this furry getup before. It didn't take long to notice that there was an entry wound through the back of her skull and an exit wound through her forehead. Shell casings that belonged to a 9mm handgun were found next to her body. There wasn't an ID found on the body, so the first goal was to identify the young woman. Detective Fisher went around nearby neighborhoods to gather as much information as possible. They were hoping to find anyone that might have spotted a suspicious vehicle or person, but no one could recall anything. That is until high school student Paige Haubert came forward to tell detectives what she saw. The night before, she was having a little get-together at her house. She was hanging out with some friends outside in the backyard when they heard a single gunshot fire. The blast was so loud that they all dropped to the ground. She wasn't sure exactly what time it was, but believed it was around 2:15 or 2:30 a.m. Detectives seemed very fixated on this outfit. At first, they thought that she was a sex worker or her killer had a fetish for fuzzy outfits. And I don't mean to make light of this, but it's almost comical how worked up these men are over her outfit.
I know, it's like so unusual for their little minds.
They're just like why fixated? Is she blue and fuzzy? And the girl was wearing like very, very common rave attire for the time.
I was going to say, it sounds very rave-like.
Yeah, it's like when you go to the mall and there's like those furry hats that have the mittens attached to it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I've never even been to a rave, but I knew what I was looking at. But these guys were like, oh, it's a furry, fuzzy outfit fetish killer.
Out of this world.
What is this? On April 4th, 2011, a man named Robert Frisbee went into the police station after seeing news articles about the murder. He hadn't seen his 17-year-old daughter, Bridget, for 2 days. Bridget was supposed to be staying at a friend's house, but when she didn't come home the next day, he started getting really worried. Detectives decided to show Robert a photo of the crime scene. And there was his daughter, killed execution style and left in the woods.
Oh my God. Isn't there like some other way to do that?
I mean, it's like identifying a body. You know, there kind of isn't another way.
I guess.
Bridget Frisbee was born on December 17th, 1993, making her a Sagittarius. She had been in foster care when she went to live with Robert and his late wife. When she was 2 years old, they adopted her. She was outgoing, friendly, and full of life. She could talk to anyone and make everyone feel included. Bridget loved drawing, poetry, and riding horses. On the day of her murder, Robert had driven her to a shop to pick out an outfit for a party that she was going to. She picked out a furry rave outfit and he bought it for her, which is so sweet. I just think that's like, can you imagine like an older man going with his sweet daughter to pick out a fuzzy blue outfit? And he's just like, you know, I don't understand it, but I support it.
Yeah, but that makes me like that much sadder that they showed him a picture of the crime scene.
And it was the outfit he purchased. Robert had driven Bridget and her friend Kendall to the party that night. But when they arrived, they found out that the party had been called off. According to Robert, Bridget and Kendall just wanted to go home and ended up watching TV with him until he went to bed. detectives decided to contact the last known person to have been with Bridget, and that was Kendall. He agreed to speak to the police without hesitation. He said that yes, he had been with her that night, and he...
Wait, Kendall's a boy?
Kendall's a boy, yeah.
Oh.
He said that yes, he had been with her that night, but he had left her house shortly after Mr. Frisbee went to bed. Kendall said he spoke to her once on the phone after leaving. Bridget had snuck out of the house to go for a walk alone, apparently. When she was on the phone with Kendall, she mentioned a car driving by her. When pressed about any possible details surrounding this mystery car, he said that that was just all he knew. Before detectives left, he mentioned that Bridget had recently gotten into a really bad fight with her ex-boyfriend. Her dad even backed this up. They said that she had been very upset that day. The dad even went so far as to say that her ex was the only person that he could possibly think of that would ever want to cause harm to his daughter.
Oh.
Police decided to drive over to the ex-boyfriend's house to pay him a visit. As the officers drove up to the house and got out of their car, they couldn't believe what they were looking at. The whole front of the house was covered with bullet holes.
What?
Yeah. There were bricks on the sidewalk, bullet holes in the windows and the front door. When they looked through the windows, it looked as if the family had moved out a while ago. Apparently, a drive-by shooting had occurred a few weeks prior, but nobody was injured, so the incident was just not reported to the police.
Well, I guess if you're being targeted in a
in some sort of drive-by,
then you probably aren't inclined.
You're up to no good, probably.
Yeah, probably.
They obviously had no idea who did this, but they couldn't help but think that there had to be a connection between Bridget's murder and the drive-by shooting. Officers went over to a neighbor's house and asked Addison Stevens if he had seen or heard anything suspicious the night of the drive-by. He said that he heard it all happen. An entire magazine was emptied into the house, and then the car drove away. The next,
okay, wait, I don't mean to be like this, but I'm going to be like this. Mm-hmm. His name is Addison.
I know. We're getting a lot of girl names on guys.
Yeah.
In this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
And I confirmed gender, so
okay, good.
I didn't just confidently decide that for both okay. of these men.
Okay, good.
I didn't decide their gender for them.
That is a thing that sometimes you do. You just confidently decide something and then start writing it as fact.
That's who they are now.
I just wanted to double check.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's confirmed male.
Okay.
The next day, the family packed up and moved out of the house. The neighbors had all come to the same conclusion. Only one person was being targeted, and that was Bridget's ex-boyfriend, Jonathan Larson. Maybe it was a bad drug deal, or he owed money, or slept with the wrong person. Either way, detectives needed to know why this person might want to harm the ex-girlfriend. To figure this out, they had to find out what was going on in Bridget's life at the time of her death, and this was really something that only her friends and classmates might know about her. One guy in particular stood out to the detectives, a friend named Alex. It's Alex.
A friend of theirs named Alex.
Fuck. One guy in particular stood out to the detectives, a friend named Alex Olivieri. The school administrator said that he wasn't the kind to get in trouble, but he was a fairly odd kid. After interviewing Alex, detectives were taken aback by his mannerisms and the way that he spoke to them. They walked away feeling like he was just very strange, but they couldn't put a finger on why exactly. Alex admitted to driving around Bridget's neighborhood the night of the murder. He said that he had been driving with his buddy, Alan Perez, and even though they drove by her house, he claimed that they never actually saw Bridget. There was no explanation of why he was driving through her area, but he made it clear that it was just a little night drive and that they could even talk to Alan to back up his claims. Alex insisted that he had nothing to do with her murder, then added in that he didn't even know that she had been killed until he saw it on the news the following day.
Of course you don't learn about it till you learn about it. What the hell?
I didn't even know about it until I knew. And detectives like, oh my God.
Profound.
There's something a little suspicious about this guy. By the time the interview was complete. I'm so sorry.
By the time the interview was complete.
Oh my God. Alex. Oh. Fuck. By the time the interview was complete, Alex Olivieri was added to the suspect list. On April 11th, detectives tracked down Jonathan Larson's mother. When questioned about the shooting, she said that she didn't know who had been responsible, but she did mention that Jonathan had recently gotten into a fight with another man, and she believed that the drive-by could be a form of retaliation. She didn't have any of the answers, but she knew her son was the target, so she wanted him out of there to protect him and the rest of the family. After the shooting occurred, Jonathan moved to Austin to live with his father, and to her knowledge, hadn't been home since. The combination of the drive-by shooting, Bridget and Jonathan ending the relationship on very bad terms, and then him leaving town, it just made him the prime suspect.
Yeah.
Detectives flew to Austin, only to receive a call that a witness had come forward to supply crucial information, and they stated that they would only come forward in exchange for immunity. The DA granted immunity in exchange for a full and honest statement. Do you want to guess who the guy was?
Is it one with a girl name?
No, this is the only one with a boy name.
Oh, Alex?
Oh, it's Alan.
Oh, Alan.
Alan.
Oh, you just said Alan normal, so it didn't stick with me.
Oh, yeah. Alan Perez. So he's the friend that was driving around with Alex Olivieri the night of the murder. Detective Lance Fisher recalled that this was the guy that Alex claimed would vouch for him. So this was the last person that he was expecting. Alan appeared timid and nervous. It was very evident that he was trying to do the right thing and he wanted to get everything off of his chest. He claimed that the drive-by shooting and Bridget's murder were, in fact, related. Alan went on to say that a friend of Bridget's had actually been the one to shoot up Jonathan's house, and that they had done so to get back at him for cheating on Bridget. And once again, you want to guess who the friend was?
Oh my gosh. For real?
So basically, Alan is saying that Alex was the one to shoot up Bridget's ex-boyfriend's house, Jonathan, because he was pissed that Jonathan was cheating on Bridget, and even though he had no relation to it, he just was like pissed, you know, he was pissed at her.
The drama of these kids.
I know, like they take it up a notch, and I guess Alex wanted to be like, he was like obsessed with guns, and he was obsessed with the military, so he was just kind of like, I think like a pent-up violent kid.
Yeah.
A lot of people knew about the cheating scandal. Bridget was visibly upset, and even though Alex didn't know Jonathan, he took it upon himself to punish him for hurting her. In the middle of the night, Alex parked outside of the Larson home and emptied a clip before driving away. When he told Bridget what he had done for her, she was supposedly really impressed. Even though she seemed happy about what he had done, he started growing worried about Bridget snitching on him. The day of the murder, Alan had overheard Alex talk to Bridget on the phone. Alex was telling Bridget that he needed help getting rid of evidence that might link him to the shooting. Bridget was not down. Later that night, Alex and Alan were driving through Bridget's neighborhood when they spotted her walking on the side of the road in her fuzzy boots and skirt. They pulled over, and Alex told her that he needed to bury the shell casings and that it wouldn't take very long. Bridget gave in and agreed to get in the car. Alan had gotten the impression that Alex was planning on taking her to an isolated location to give her a little scare. Bridget had started telling people about what he had done to scare her ex, and he wanted to shut her up. Alex and Bridget walked into the dark woods to bury the shell casings. As Bridget began to dig, Alex took the gun out of his pocket and shot her in the back of the head. At first, investigators didn't know if they could trust Alan's story. But to prove that he was telling the truth, Alan brought them to the spot where Alex had confiscated her phone. Right where Alan said it would be were the fragments of a smashed cell phone. On April 7th, 2011, 4 days after the murder, police officers pulled up to Alex Olivieri's house, knowing that he wouldn't be detained easily. This guy wanted to join the military, he owned guns, is doing drive-by shootings, and killing teenage girls. He's just not your average high school boy.
God, I would be so terrified if I was one of those cops.
He's like the typical school shooter.
Yeah.
You know, like this, I don't know.
Yeah.
A SWAT team is ordered to shoot to kill if he shows any signs of resisting arrest. To their surprise, Alex was calm and compliant. He almost acted like he was entertained by the fact that a SWAT team was needed to bust down his door.
Oh.
He was like flattered by that. He was just like such a danger.
Yeah.
When investigators searched his car, they found blue fibers that matched the fuzzy outfit that she had been wearing the night of her murder. Even though Alex never confessed, on August 12, 2012, he was sentenced to 60 years for first-degree murder. After his daughter had been murdered, Robert Frisbee had put a loaded gun next to his bed. After Alex's sentencing, he finally unloaded the pistol. And that is the story of Bridget Frisbee.
I have such a hard time hearing stories like this sometimes that are like teenagers, because I remember when you are young like that, you feel like you can't think beyond next week. You can't think big picture. I mean, it's just extra devastating when this these kids are not even mentally fully developed, and then they just throw their lives away or take each other's lives. And it's just, it's so unfortunate.
Everything is just all encompassing, and there's no concept of like temporary pain or like, it's like everything feels like it's going to last forever.
Yeah.
And it's like high school is some of the worst years for many people. It's like the worst years of a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
And that's why there's such a high rate of even teenage suicide, is they're not able to see that this will go away once you graduate, or this could go away once you even get out of your town. Like, you might just not be around people that understand you or get you. And that can be a good thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Yet a lot of people, when they are the outsider, they see it as like being some sort of character flaw, or there's something wrong or weird about them.
Until you grow up and realize everybody is unique and weird. And like as an adult, you can succeed and set yourself apart from so much and find your people and all of those things. You know, you have to be able to think beyond tomorrow or next week.
And it makes me, and like, once again, not victim shaming, because obviously she, what happened to her was horrible, but it's even celebrating the concept of, you know, I can see how when someone's caused you pain, like this man, her first love probably cheats on her. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this enormous amount of revenge that is, you know, basically put upon the entire family. So any one of his family members could have been shot and killed.
Yeah.
And being happy about that and celebrating that and bragging about that when it could have essentially, you know, annihilated an entire family.
Yeah.
It's I think it's like the inability to weigh the weight of crime almost. It's kind of like, well, you did me wrong, so I'm doing you wrong.
Yeah, without the capacity to recognize how
imbalanced it truly is. Yeah. So just don't do stupid things when you're a kid. If you have an idea as a kid, don't act on it. Just don't leave your room.
First of all, I hope there aren't any kids listening to this, because this is not for you. But if you are,
you're stupid right now and you'll get smarter. Just trust us.
And we can say that because we used to be stupid
as well.
Well, but, you told that well. I know it's a little rusty getting back into the swing of things, but
you'll be cropping some of that out.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be cropping a lot of the mess ups
for the sake of people not, you know, shutting the podcast off.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. No problem. Well, I love you.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you enjoy listening. We owe everything to the many journalists, authors, filmmakers, psychiatrists, and psychologists whose extensive work and expertise we pulled from to share this episode with you. To view detailed source material, as well as content from today, please visit us on Instagram and TikTok at Shorties Podcast. We really love doing this show, and if you'd like to help with the continued creation of it, you can support by donating to our Patreon, patreon.com/shortiespodcast. This episode was hosted by Ashley Brumley Johnson and Anika Tharina.